Hi, I'm John Jenkins, Managing Editor of thecorporatecouncil.net, and I'd like to welcome you to today's Timely Takes podcast. My guests today are Odera Nweze and Remy Shimimana. Both of these gentlemen are partners at Fager Drinker. Odera is a member of the firm's litigation group, and Remy is in the firm's corporate group. Fager recently published an article on Delaware's statutory procedure for ratifying defective corporate acts, and that's the topic we're going to delve into today. Odera and Remy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Our
Thank you,
pleasure.
John.
So let's dive right in here. Maybe could you just provide us with an overview of Delaware's statutory procedure for ratification of defective corporate acts?
Sure. Well, I mean, at a high level, I think of ratification as a way for a company to fix a mistake or an oversight in its past corporate action, like board level actions. And so under sections 204 and 205 of the Delaware General Corporation Law, companies can essentially fix those defective corporate acts. And these are acts that would otherwise be void or voidable due to a failure of authorization, meaning that the board or management failed to get the proper approvals or the proper steps in order for that corporate act to be effected. And this process really involves a series of steps, right? So there can be the adoption of a board resolution, potential stockholder approval, and in certain cases, the filing of a certificate of validation. And the Court of Chancery can also play a role in reviewing and validating the ratification process.
In terms of examples, what are some examples of defective corporate acts for which this statutory procedure has been used?
So some of them could imagine a company that issues stock, right? Corporation will issue stock to shareholders. The certificate of incorporation has to authorize the shares before you issue them. So let's say you have a corporation that has Class A stock that is authorized in the certificate of incorporation, but at some point you intend to issue, preferred stock, maybe Class B or B1, whatever you call it, that has certain rights, right? Everybody thinks they are going to do that. Maybe the board adopts resolutions to authorize the class, but you don't seek shareholder approval, right? And then you do the issuance, you go on thinking that you have issued the stock until you realize that the stock was really not issued because it wasn't authorized, right? That's one example. Another example is, maybe initially you have a corporation that says the board size is four directors. And you appoint the four directors, maybe the incorporator does that. But later on, you add a director through a board resolution. And maybe your bylaws don't allow you to do that. Maybe before you can increase the size of the board, you have to go to the shareholders. Or maybe there is one specific shareholder who has a consent right through a voting agreement. And so those could be, or those are corporate or defective acts that have to be, can be ratified through Section 204 or validated through Section 205. That's just some examples.
Now, what are limitations? What limitations do corporations have on their ability to ratify defective acts through this statutory procedure? And then, are there some actions that are out of bounds that still can't be ratified?
Yeah, I mean, I think first, I think we got to start with the proposition that Delaware's framework for ratification is meant to be flexible, but it's not a magic wand, right? So certain actions like those involving fraud or bad faith may be beyond the reach of ratification. And the same is true about certain actions that violate fundamental corporate laws. And examples of actions that violate fundamental corporate laws include the requirement for a quorum of directors or shareholders, or also if, let's say, company directors were bribed to approve a bad deal, ratification wouldn't make that legal.
Yeah. And if I may add, you ratify a corporate act that you say was defective, but if no act was actually taken, if there was no actual attempt to take the action, then you cannot go back and say, we meant to do this, and therefore let's use this safe harbor to approve an action that nobody took. You have, and actually the section requires you to outline what the act was, what the defect was, and then actually fix it. So if there was no purported issuance of stock, for example, you cannot go back and try to issue the stock using this statute.
Yeah, actually, as a piggyback to that, Remy reminded me of a case that I once tried where, after I confirmed with management at depositions that a particular corporate act had not been taken by either the board or its executive committee, as I was flying back from the deposition, I received a unanimous consent ratifying that act that never happened. So that's so Remy's point. Yeah, my response was, how can you ratify something you never did?
Yeah, but you got to give him credit for the
For
for the
trying,
at
right?
least, right? Yeah.
You guys are better men than me. I was very confused.
Well, see, we're both from the corporate side, Odara, so we're used to a more flexible approach to things than you litigator. Anyway,
Absolutely.
in terms of the process, do companies have to obtain stockholder approval in order to ratify a defective act?
Yeah, not always. I mean, the default is you go to the shareholders for approval when you're ratifying, but then the exception is so broad because, the statute says if the action had to be approved by shareholders in the first place, right? Or if the defect related to Section 203, which relates to combinations with interested stockholders. But the universe of things that a board can do without going to stockholders is very broad, actually including, stock issuances where the class has already been approved and it's in the charter, and where you have enough shares authorized. The board can basically do issuances. So at that point, if it wasn't done properly, let's say if the bylaws require, more than a majority of the board members, and then maybe less than that, or maybe it requires a super majority and less than that approve the action, you could ratify it through the board. But certain things, still have to go to stockholders.
During your opening remarks, you mentioned the Chancery Court has a role in this process at times. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so I mean, I think under DGCL Section 205, the Court of Chancery can play a role in the ratification process by reviewing and then validating the steps taken by the corporation and its stockholders to ratify the act. And so to Remy's point, that is where the court might say, well, you sought stockholder approval and this was not something that required it. Or the inverse, right? You didn't seek stockholder approval and this process actually required it, so the ratification didn't take. So that's the role that the Court of Chancery plays. If someone challenges the ratification, the court can decide whether it was valid or invalid.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I know that, this statute is not all that old, and I know this was always a big unknown in Delaware law is exactly, the default was, well, we messed this up, let's go to shareholders, and maybe sort of that might kind of fix it, but we're not really sure. This process has certainly provided some certainty that didn't exist before, and it's one that I think companies and their advisors would be well advised to keep in mind because to err is human, and there is a procedure you can follow to fix your mistakes, which is nice to know. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time today. It's very very interesting discussion, and thanks for sharing your insights with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. If I can end on one note, there is one thing that I've noticed in this particular statute and as it relates to the body of case law around it. And it's the fact that you have void acts and voidable acts. And this issue re recently came up in a ratification that I was working on. And the question is, how do you treat void acts differently from voidable acts in the context of 204 and 205? And I really thought that there was an answer out there in the case law, and perhaps I just missed it. But so far, I don't know what the distinction there is. And so that might be another area where Delaware could further supplement its already robust body of case law.
Well, we know that we have some listeners on the Chancery Court there, and they're not shy about sharing their opinions in public. So perhaps we'll hear more from them on that topic, and eventually perhaps the legislature as well. But gentlemen, Remy, Odara, thanks so much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank
Thank
you,
you.
John.